Tonight, a series of short films about the history and nature of New York's transit system will be screened at the Brecht Forum as part of a series called Rights to the City. And joining me now are two of the contributors to the program, Kasim Shepard, director of Urban Omnibus, an online project of the Architectural League of New York, and filmmaker Manny Kirschheimer. Welcome to our show.
Thanks. Thank you.
Kasim, when was the first subway line built in New York, and who financed it?
We know that the first subway started to in 1904, but the actual history of mass transit extends back into the 1870s.
Do we have any idea of when the first film was made featuring New York's mass transit system?
Oh, earlier than that. I think in the 1890s, a particular popular form of filmmaking were the actualities, in which case the electrification of an elevated rail or anything along those lines was something, a spectacle to be beholden.
Well, you're working for the Architectural League of New York, so you must have thought about how the subway has come to shape New York City.
Indeed.
How much has it? How much has it influenced the demographics of our city?
Oh, I'd say very much so. And I think the important thing about transportation generally, not just subway systems, is they're often planned in such a way not only to respond to development patterns, but also to catalyze them. And I think that you'll see that throughout the history of transportation in New York, that it's not only been responsive to where people are moving, where development is happening, but in many cases sort of promulgated that. And in not just within the city as well. I think the important thing to realize about the MTA as well as transit more generally is that it operates really at a regional scale increasingly.
The diversity of the city as represented by the subways, something that filmmakers focused on from fairly early time as well. I remember all of those movies from the 30s that would start off with somebody leaving a tenement and going to the subway and then emerging at some big office building. Many, you're nodding your head.
Well, Jay Leiter, who was Eisenstein's biographer, came back from the Eisenstein Film School in Moscow and made a film called Bronx Morning, which is taken almost entirely from the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful film, one of my favorites of all time in 1931. And that was actually shown in the first installment of the Right to the City series.
Would you find communities that are linked by, for example, are the Chinatowns that we see in Queens and Brooklyn linked to the Manhattan Chinatown? Is the subway what led people to go into these different neighborhoods?
I think what's interesting, most interesting about, you know, when you think of ethnic enclaves, there are really some very important lessons to be learned about different forms of transportation patterns that are maybe not municipal in orientation. I mean, Chinatown is a really interesting example because there is a privately owned mass transit system that operates very efficiently between Chinatowns in Flushing, in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, and in Manhattan, which perhaps the MTA would do well to learn from. Perhaps their services aren't necessarily responding to that particular ridership.
You mean private bus lines?
Mm-hmm.
Your film, Manny, Stations of the Elevated, is being screened tonight, and it shows the subway of 30 years ago in a romantic light. Would you, if you're making a similar film today, could it be as romantic?
Well, I really didn't think I was making it in a romantic light.
Well, it's taken on that sort of aura because we think back to that time as an interesting time.
Yes, I just brought some material along in which someone who codifies all the trains and their routes talks about how awful the graffiti is right now. That was 1976, mm-hmm. And I started shooting the film in 1977 before it was liked by hardly anyone except Norman Mailer. If you remember, and I was intrigued by the color. I was part of a co-op, a food co-op, and once a month I needed to drive out to Hunts Point at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and these colored trains would stream by over the Bronx Expressway, and it was so lovely. And I had only seen it, in my face on stations. So that's really what got
You were seeing a positive side to this graffiti because for most New Yorkers it just involved defacing every possible space with various tags and gang names.
Well, if you remember, it was all over the inside as well. Mm-hmm. And there was really no...
And etched on the windows, if at all possible.
Not then. Mm-hmm. That was after the steel trains came and they could no longer do it out. Then they would do that. And nowadays, it's not only etched, it's also with acid, I think, that they do it. But when you say, would I see it in that light today? Well, they're not as interesting today. I mean, they got to be more and more interesting as the writers got to be more and more arty.
Would you even be able to shoot this sort of thing today? Aren't there restrictions placed on filmmakers nowadays?
I wasn't allowed to shoot it then either. They took away, you know, I gave them a false script. I gave the MTA, I shouldn't say this, I guess, a false script, and they gave me a station pass. But I went into the yards during the day. And after a while, I was chased out and my pass was taken away. And so now we had to do it with longer lenses and kind of, you know, make believe.
Well, today it would be a lot easier because digital cameras are kind of small and a lot more maneuverable.
That's true. Although we always shot on a tripod, and I would today, too, to get the best out of it.
My guests are filmmaker Manny Kirchheimer and Kasim Shepard, who is director of Urban Omnibus, an online project of the Architectural League of New York. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. There's a film series. Well, there's a series called Rights to the City. And you say tonight is not the only night that we're seeing films about mass transit?
Tonight is not the only night that we're seeing films that sort of chronicle a history of filmic representations of New York and sort of call into question, you know, all sorts of different decisions that have been made, not just in the representation of urban problems, but in the conversations about political arguments about the city as well. The first were a series of city symphonies from the 30s, including A Bronx Morning, which Manny mentioned, and the last will be next week that we'll talk about some more recent investigations of how public space is used.
Can the subway be said to serve as a barometer of the city's health? Because in the 1970s, as the city went into crisis, so did the subways.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting to hear about problems on the MTA again during this economic downturn.
Indeed. I mean, I think you can certainly see it as a barometer of where investment is considered to be the highest priority in all levels of sort of across municipal scales. And I think that it's important to think when we think of the subway and we think of mass transit not to think of them as exclusively coterminous, because in fact, you know, the mass transportation system of New York includes buses, it includes bridges, it includes tunnels, it includes regional commuter rail, as well as in a larger conception of transit includes road system, taxis, walking, et cetera.
Despite the economic downturn and this year's $1.2 billion budget shortfall, the MTA, maybe they're being a bit optimistic, is projecting a surplus running over the next few years. If you had your say, I speak to both of you as lovers of our mass transit system, how would you spend that money? First of all, do you think there's going to be that surplus?
I mean, I think projections are exactly that.
They're projections. But would you do new development projects or would you upgrade the existing infrastructure?
For me, I think what I hope to be a big priority in the development of our transit system as it grows is to try and work on how different modes of transportation can reinforce each other and be flexible enough such that we're not thinking of our subways and our use of the roads and our use of buses as exclusive, but actually can reinforce each other's strengths and be more flexible.
Well, Manny, your film deals with aesthetics. Do you think I go into some stations, I'm shocked by the stained walls, the tiles that have been allowed to fall, I don't understand why some stations look great and other ones have been allowed to deteriorate that way.
Yeah, I agree with that, and that's really where I'd like the money to go. Right now, they're doing the 96th Street station, way overdue, and the 59th in Manhattan. And, of course, they've done some. They've done some beautifully in Times Square and some other places. But I want to get back to your earlier question about romantic and when I said that these were pretty pictures. And it's true that the beauty of that stream of trains induced me to want to make a film. But the film has content, and the images that these kids were doing have content. They came out mostly out of the South Bronx, and they show a great deal of burning buildings. They show a great deal of whores, of fire, of words like hell, heaven is life, earth is hell, things of that kind. So these they were sending messages. And so these things had content, and that's what I dealt with in the film.
What about the new kinds of messages that we are receiving? The MTA has just announced a deal which in which it sold naming rights to stations on Atlantic Avenue, Pacific Street, Flatbush Avenue, and downtown Brooklyn to Barclays Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Is
well, maybe that accounts for some of the projected surplus in coming up with new aspects of the transit system to commodify and sell, including obviously air rights in addition to naming rights.
They couldn't get Citibank at Citi Field, you know, which is outrageous because the city put so much money into Citi Field.
Well, Barclays has suffered a bit during this economic downturn. It's interesting that they would want to have stations named after them. If you, as somebody who's made films, do you have any favorite New York City films?
Oh, well, yes. Leo Hurwitz, my mentor, made a film called Here at the Water's Edge, mm-hmm. which is quite wonderful, an hour-long film.
And then for music lovers is Daybreak Express, which pairs footage of elevated trains with Duke Ellington's music.
Right, and Stations has Charlie Mingus's music.
So that's nowadays the only music we hear on the subway is through iPods. Sometimes other people's iPods, and I'm always afraid for their hearing, but that's a whole other issue. My thanks to both of you for coming by to talk about this this program tonight. It's at the Brecht Forum, which is located at, what's the exact address?
I think it's 451 West Street.
Mm-hmm. That's in downtown Manhattan. And the series is called Rights to the City. Tonight, a number of films about the transit system. And what will the two of you be doing? Well, in your case, Manny, one of your films, a film is being shown. What about you, Kasim?
I'm just there to join in the fun and hear from the perspectives of people, not only from the audience, but also there'll be a number of MTA station agents as well as participants in the Transit Workers Local 100 who will be there. So I'm interested to hear their perspectives as well as to contribute to the conversation.
And there's a link to the schedule on our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to Kasim Shepard, director of Urban Omnibus, an online project of the Architectural League of New York, and Manny Kirschheimer, whose film Stations of the Elevated will be shown tonight. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks.